I don't have much to say today. Not much is necessary to say. One of my goals has been to become completely unnecessary. Together we have gone a good deal in that direction. We have not succeeded completely, but the retreat is not over. First of all, I would like to say a few words about tonight. I asked if today was Wednesday because I couldn't believe we've sat through 5 nights. Right? Could have fooled me. Okay. Well, we sat through 5 nights. Anyway, tonight we don't sit through the night. Tonight, the Zendo will be closed 9 o'clock, right now? At the end of the last regular Zazen. So at 9 o'clock tonight, the Zendo will be closed. There will be no sitting. Everyone will be asked to go back to their rooms and have a good night's sleep. Okay? First of all, we do this because some of us have been up now for 5 nights. And tomorrow we will finish the retreat. So we will have to return to our work, to our families. Some of us are even driving. We must take great care. You may feel very, very strong and awake, never more alert, but it only takes 1 second falling asleep at the wheel. So it is important for us to take great care here during the retreat to throw ourselves completely into the practice. But tonight I ask all of you to get a good night's sleep. Do you understand? Some of you might be delighted and think you didn't have to ask twice. But others may actually be a little bit disappointed. They are, you know, we call it a kind of a session high. Huh? They've reached such a deep and steady and calm state that they want to continue on. That can be done. You are going to need to go to sleep, have a good night's sleep eventually. Anyway, what we will do tonight is everyone will have a good night's sleep. However, the retreat is not yet over. So tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock, Ron, I believe again someone will go around and they hit clappers, I guess. No? Yeah. If you were sleeping through it, huh? Anyway, if you have an alarm clock, use it because you may sleep through, huh? But just as always, from 6 o'clock in the morning, there will be wake up. 6:30, we will meet in here, right? So at is that correct, Ron? Right, 6:30? Like every morning, huh? So just like every other morning, the Zendo then will be open and we will begin, as always, the four vows, huh? Does everyone understand? So this is a precious opportunity for you to not stop your practice, but to continue your practice in a very different way, by getting a good night's sleep, waking up, and then just going right back to the practice. And then we have until the middle of the afternoon, so we still have several hours of good, solid zazen tomorrow. So we've never done this before, but partly because there have now been 5 nights that people could sit through for practical reasons, for practical reasons, so that you get home safely tomorrow, but also for our own practice. I want all of you to do this. So tonight at 9 o'clock, when you go to bed, if you want to take a little walk first, that's fine. If you want to take a shower, do some stretching, it's not suggested that you read, you know, you want to go back and read that book, read that Zen book or whatever. The retreat is not over, so I don't suggest that you read or check your email or whatever. Okay? The retreat is still going on, but refresh yourself. If you want to take a shower, stretch, and then put on your pajamas if you got them, whatever, and have a good night's sleep. One way to do that is if you can lie on your back and then just gently allow the focus of your practice to rest again, like when you're sitting, below your belly here, but now very, very gently, little, like a little warm ball, very gently. You're not sitting zazen now, you're going to sleep. So it should be calming, relaxing. And then just allow yourself to fall asleep. When you wake up in the morning, if you do it correctly, it will already be there before the first thought. You don't have to think. It's already there. So you can see how important it is, as I spoke Friday evening, sustained, continuous practice. That means even when you go to sleep. In a sense, you're not practicing. In a sense, you're not practicing in your sleep. But this is a way to go to sleep in such a way that the practice remains. And then in the morning, the instant you wake up, it is there. Do you see? So this in itself is quite valuable, quite useful for you to take home to your life. It is also a chance for you to see the continuity, sustained, continuous nature of real practice. Then, it's not necessary for me to explain, you will see for yourself. The sitting that we do may be, for some of you, quite different tomorrow morning. How do you think it will be tomorrow morning? Of course. Very hard. I think you got that one right now. Yeah. Even if it's much easier, it will still be indeed very hard. For some of you, you will probably notice, maybe as expected, that you're really refreshed and really strong, and it's as soon as you start sitting, it's very deep, and this is great. For other people, you will say, oh, boy, great, good night. I slept like a log, we said. Huh? I slept like a log, completely. So I'm ready. And then they'll sit down, and what will they do in 5 minutes? That's okay. We have the stick of compassion for that. You might want to take the shower in the morning to wake yourself up, or splash some water on your face, have some coffee or tea. Do the people here prepare that in the morning, or does the stale? Yeah. So again, as always, in the background, you notice things mysteriously appear, huh, and disappear. So again, we are deeply indebted, appreciative to the people who are working behind the scenes. So hopefully tomorrow morning there will be some coffee and some tea, okay? We're not ending the retreat tonight. We are taking time for a good, solid night's sleep. And that can be a real important part of the practice, because we sleep in the real world, don't we? Even Gautama Buddha slept. So we can sleep in a way that is one with our practice. Okay? So I trust you will do this in such a way that our practice can continue. We don't have to keep pushing. Even giving a good night's sleep, that practice can continue. I want you to experience that for yourself tonight, okay? And then tomorrow, we still have several hours until the afternoon to continue with that fresh mind of practice. Is that clear about tonight? Okay? The sitting has been very deep, very solid. Many people have really been able to see through a great deal. Of course, almost all of us have also had to struggle a great deal. A lot of pain, some of us very great deal, sleepiness. That is part of the practice too. But as the days go on, I think all of you have seen the value and the limit of the willpower. It is very helpful in the beginning to get us started and to get past the momentary inclinations. What were passing fancies? Yeah, Haram helped me with a simpler English word. Passing fancy, momentary inclinations, which, as you know, at that moment can seem very, very real and strong. So the willpower is very important there, but we have been going on since Friday evening. So all of you at least have experienced moments where you could know in your own bones that something is carrying you in your practice. It's not just you yourself. There is something more profound here, and you touched it. This is good. It helps you see the way in your practice. It shouldn't cause you to ease up, but rather to practice even more in earnest, but with a little different tone. You don't have to fight with yourself anymore, huh? And I think you've noticed that's the really hard part. That's the real tiring, exhausting part, is when we are fighting ourselves. Huh? So I trust all of you in the last 5 days have had a sense of when that fighting comes to rest, what carries us in our practice. For those of you who still want one last push, we have over 24 hours now. That's a long time. Here is a short quotation from an Indian Buddhist text, relatively early Buddhism, way before Zen Buddhism, from what's called the Lalita Vistara. It's an Indian Buddhist text. It's describing, it's a legend, but what is going on in Shakyamuni Gotama when he sits under the Bodhi tree just before he gets awakened. You all know, I think, the general story, huh? He almost kills himself doing ascetic, right, very extreme practices, not eating, not sleeping. He gets to the point where he's just skin and bones, right? It says his belly button is touching his backbone. There's nothing there. This is the result of his ascetic, really extreme, trying to force the body to realize. Eventually, what he realizes is, I'm losing my energy, my life energy. I'm dying. I'm not getting free of all dis-ease. I'm certainly not getting enlightened. I'm killing myself. This is not the way. Something is wrong. Something is wrong with the way I am practicing. And again, as the early Buddhist texts make it clear, it says at that point, he just happened to remember a childhood event. When he was a small child, he was kind of the son of a prince, so he was treated very well. And apparently there was a kind of a ceremony for farming the fields in ancient India. So they had a kind of a simple plow, and they were digging up the earth, kind of a ceremony for the beginning of plowing the fields, okay? And the young child, Gotama Buddha, was seated very comfortably. But somehow, in watching that, in one account it says he saw that the worms, the small animals being dug up as they were preparing the ground, and it moved him very deeply. And he describes it as just spontaneously entering a state of deep samadhi. He wasn't trying to meditate. He didn't even know how. But spontaneously, naturally, he entered a rather deep state of concentrated oneness, of calm. And it was not a sensuous state, as he describes. It wasn't involved simply with the senses, although he saw something. It was a deep inner calm. This became the inspiration for his final awakening. You see? He had almost killed himself, and he realized, I can't make it happen. I can commit suicide, but I can't make myself let myself go. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. And then he just happened to remember this experience as a child, spontaneously entering this state. And he realized, this is what is missing. This is what is missing. So it says he bathed in the river. He refreshed himself, like we will do tonight. And then he even took some food. He was fasting at that time, with five other ascetics, five other people who were practicing together. But he decided, no, this is not right. So he took some food, some nourishment, to get his strength back. And he bathed in the water. He cleaned himself in the river. The other ascetics saw him and said, he chickened out. Too much for him. Couldn't handle it. We will not associate with him anymore. He gave in to sensuous indulgence. So they left disgusted. Later, of course, they become his first disciples. But he then decides to sit under what has become called the Bodhi tree, the tree of awakening, Ficus religiosa. And again, according to the Indian Buddhist tradition, this is what Gautama Buddha said at that time. Skin, flesh, and bone may dry up in my body, but without complete awakening, I will not leave this seat. This is good inspiration for our final full day here, huh? Once again, skin, flesh, bone may dry up in my body, but without complete awakening, I will not leave this seat. This is the true middle way. This is, I don't call it the middle way, it's wrong. It's the core way. It is the core way beyond indulging in the senses or mere ascetic practice. It is the central, core, essential way. One more, this time a poem of inspiration from the later Zen tradition. Some of you are just at this point, so it may be helpful. It uses the metaphor of an archer, bow and arrow, the bow and the arrows. But of course, we are talking about practice, not about warfare. We're talking about practice. The poem is this. When your bow is broken and your arrows exhausted, all used, there, shoot, shoot with your whole being. This is also wonderful inspiration for some of you at this point, huh? You feel like your bow, maybe your back, is broken. All of your techniques have become useless. All of your arrows, all of the energy in the gone. Nothing left, nothing left. Utterly exhausted. There is where you shoot with your whole being. You can find that in Shibayama's comment on case one of the Mumonkan if you want to do some homework. I mentioned Goso Hoen. He's the Chinese Zen master of the Sung Dynasty who spoke of Sanzuru Koto Nijū Nen, Ima Masani Haji o Shiru. In English, being a master for 20 years, only now I know my own shame. There's another story about Goso Hoen, where he is a monk in training, it goes like this. His master is with Goso Hoen and two other disciples. So there's three disciples and their master. Goso Hoen is one of the monks, one of the disciples. They happen to be traveling and they are staying at a kind of an inn, and they are discussing the Dharma. They get involved. It goes on late into the night. Without realizing it, it has become completely dark. And so, as Zen masters do, they can take any situation, any occasion, and use it to point to the truth. So he asks, now, each of you, say something to the moment. Say something at this moment. So the first monk speaks of a radiant phoenix dances in the sunset sky. Phoenix. Do you know what that is in German? Oh, good. A radiant phoenix, a bird who has transformed itself into a phoenix. And it's radiant. It's glowing. A radiant phoenix dances in the sunset sky. A marvelous expression, a poetic, typical Chinese expression. You might say it describes the wonder of practice, the wonder of that moment. The second monk, what about you? The second monk says, an iron snake lies across the ancient road. This is also a kind of a poetic expression in Chinese. A snake, you know? What snake is it? But it's an iron snake. It's not your order. It's an iron snake. An iron snake lies across the ancient road. As a poetic expression, this is pointing to the absolute undifferentiation. Nothing can be distinguished or separated. Again, a very deep state of samadhi that he has entered, and he is giving expression to it, in a natural way. We don't speak this way, it sounds strange, but 750 years ago, this would be like quoting something from the Beatles for us, In a hard day's night, Eggert? We all know what that means, don't we? Even if you don't know English that well. You know a hard day's night? Well, this was the language of their time, so they used it. So we don't have to blame them or tell them that they're being esoteric. 1,000 years ago, someone may read our exchange, not likely, but and come across the line, a hard day's night. Heaven knows what they might make of that, Some Zenistic nonsense, Well, actually, it was a hit song by the Beatles. Well, here too, don't be fooled by the language, okay? So once again, using the language of their time and expressing their mind at the time, one of the monks said, a radiant phoenix dances in the sunset sky. Wonderful, wonderful. The other monk, an iron snake lies across the ancient road. Marvelous. Then the third monk, Goso Hoen, responds, watch your step. Not very profound, is it? Well, then again, at that time, in the dark, having to return to their quarters, rather than dancing in the autumn sky or iron snakes, he responds with, "Watch your step." The master responds, "Only Goso Hoen will destroy my teaching." Of course, to destroy means to utterly digest, and of course, he became the successor. So again, Zenistic language. But the master said, "Only Goso Hoen will destroy my teachings," which he should do. Huh? This is a compliment, not an insult. It's only, there are different versions of it, it's only three or four Chinese characters. Sometimes it's read as, "Illuminate what lies underfoot," something like that, huh? But very simply, "Watch your step." Watch your step. That expression is found at almost every Zen temple in Japan, and there are thousands and thousands of them. Almost every Zen temple in Japan, when you go into the entrance, it says, "Look under your own feet, watch your step." This expression from Goso Hoen, to this day, 750 years later, that is the sign at the entrance of every Zen temple. Some of you have been to Japan, you may know. What does that mean to the average Japanese? To the average Japanese, they read it and think, "Straighten out my shoes." Because you take your shoes off there and go into the temple. So they take it in a very worldly, practical way, and they're very good at arranging their shoes very neatly. For those of you who have lived in Japan, sometimes we walk out of the zendo, shoes every which way and hats, coats hanging. In Japan, in Japanese Zen, they're very, very neat. So when the Japanese, the average Japanese person going to a temple, reads that, if he thinks anything at all, he thinks, arranges his shoes very neatly. Nice, but that's not all that it's saying. Another way of reading it is, whoever you are, you have come to this temple. Perhaps you are seeking peace. Perhaps you are seeking a profound exchange with the master. But whatever your reason for coming here, are you looking under your own feet? If you are really looking under your own feet, you don't even need to come here. Then again, if you come here and you just look under the master's feet, or you view the garden, all in vain. So this is a precious teaching, not just for the temples of Japan, but perhaps for us here and now, in terms of the mindfulness of our practice, but also when we leave tomorrow and we go back to the world. Practice is always one of watching your step. If you do that, things will go well.